So let's go to the next stage. Learn with you a passage, three words from the Zohar. The Zohar says that for 2,000 years, the way that we traveled was the safe road. But today, 13th century Zohar, today, the way to travel is Derech HaTaninim, the way of the dragon. What's the way of the dragon? So the way of the dragon in the Zohar is Derech HaAtzilut HaSmalit. It's the way of the left-hand column. The left-hand column in the Zohar is the way of Ra. It's the way of darkness. It's the way of evil. It's the way in which we no longer look at evil as being opposed to light, but we look at evil as being in a shadow dance with the light. Let's begin again. Another image. Three levels. In Kabbalistic literature, there are always three levels. Here we go. And whenever we learn for real, we start gently, slowly. We don't wisdotain, and we slowly begin to move to where we want to go. So three levels. Here we go. Three levels. In Kabbalah, whether it's light and darkness, whether it's love and out of love, there's always three levels. There's always level one, level two, level three. And when we talk about light and darkness, we need to understand what we mean in terms of this scheme of three levels. So here's the scheme. You fall in love. It's great. Fabulous. Gorgeous. You fall in love. I mean, it's unbelievable. Right? Everything's perfect. Love conquers all. Right? I mean, right? Wild, beautiful sexuality is precisely the same as going to the market together. That's what happens when you fall in love, right? It's the same thing, right? Everything's the same, right? Just doing together, being together, right? It's precisely the same thing, right? When going to the market and making love is the same thing, that's falling in love. It means you're there, right? It's just the act of being together, the pure eros of togetherness completely overwhelms you, right? The fears kind of reside, right? Subside, and there's this enormous sense of empowerment and audacity. And then, about 6 months later, or a week later, or 3 years later, you wake up and you see this kind of oddly shaped body next to you, and you say, what the hell was I thinking? Right? Now, you should know that the person on the other side of the bed often wakes up and thinks the same thing. Now, it's not immediately polite to say when you get up in the morning, so you kind of hold it inside, hope nobody realizes you made a mistake. If you're already married, so you kind of think about it in one way. If it's before you're married, you think about it in another way. Right? But it happens to everybody. There's not one person in this room. I don't care what your relationship is. I don't care how fabulous it is or how not fabulous it is. Every single person who's fallen in love has also experienced that moment of falling out of love. Now, let's go slow. Okay? There's going to be level three here. Don't worry. Okay? Level one is falling in love. Right? Ecstasy. Gorgeous. You're there. Level two is when you fall out of love, right? You lose it. Now, what do you do at level two? You have a choice. What we usually do is, since we're not there anymore, we try and go back and find another level one, right? And we get ourselves out of the level two. Level two is the work. Level two is kind of difficult. It's complicated. There's arguments. There's conflict, okay? So what we do is we don't like level two. So we do one of two things. Either we try and get to three, or we go back to one. Okay, three, right? Three is when you re-engage loving, right? Three is when you re-engage relationship. Three is when you go deep. Three is when you know you're going to stay and do the work. Three is when you know that actually the person next to you is there for good and for bad, understands you in your weakness and in your pathology and in your silliness and in your gorgeousness, and is totally committed to the infinite specialness that's you. And then when you make love, it's a little bit different. Right? It's got a little more of a fragility to it. Right? It's got a little more of a gentleness to it. Right? Right? It's got less wildness, although occasionally it kind of gets back there, but not as often. Right? And you worry about that all the time and think that everybody else is there but you. And you kind of go to psychology about that and pay a lot of money, but don't worry, everyone's got the same problem going on. Right? But basically, there's one, two, and three. Right? There is ecstasy, level one, pain, level two, transcendence, level three. Do you hear that? Ecstasy, pain, transcendence. Now, if every time I engage the pain, I return to level one, I'll remain my entire life in a kind of pseudo shallow ecstasy, and I'll never touch pleasure. I'll never touch pleasure, which is transcendence. Right? All of life is about reaching for level three in everything. right? You have questions and answers in life, right? So level one is a question, right? It's a question. The quest I'm on. A baby's born. What does a baby say when a baby's born? What, why, where, how, when? Then you get answers. You study thought. You study mathematics and physics and philosophy. And you begin to paint a reality map of the world. You understand the world. You have answers. You don't have questions. But then as you get wiser and older, you begin to realize that all of those answers breed and create new questions. The Holy Rebbe of Kutsk, the master of Kutsk, says, he says, when a baby's born, a baby asks why, what, where, when, how. Then the baby grows up and gets wise, filled with answers. And then the baby gets really wise, becomes an old wise woman, an old wise man. And what does the old wise woman or old wise man say? What, where, when, how? And what's the difference between them? Worlds of difference. One's level one, the other's level three. You hear that? So let's look at evil and good. Level one, ra, evil, bad, negative, impure, unholy. Level two, now it's subtle. Level two, the tov, the good, stands against the ra, the evil. Level two, it's a world of discipline. It's a world which rejects, right, any engagement with the ra. It's a world of rules. It's a world of law. It's an important world. But from level two, you go to level three. Now, watch for a second. Level three never dismisses level two. It always incorporates and transcends level two. Level three doesn't dismiss or delete or nullify level two. It always incorporates and transcends level two. So when I get to level three, which is the engagement with the dark side, which is the engagement with evil, which is the engagement with my own darkness, with my own trickster, with my own shadow, I don't leave ethics and discipline behind. I incorporate them, but then transcend to a place where I can engage the darkness. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about some real powerful notion where I can touch and engage the dragon. It's called in Kabbalah, Derech HaTaninim, the way of the dragon. Let's look at it for a second. What are these two ways? The first way, we would call in culture, the masculine way. What is the masculine way? How does the masculine persona, when I say masculine, I don't mean man, I mean the masculine archetype in culture. What do we do with the dragon? Kill the dragon, you slay the dragon. What does St. George do to the dragon? Slays the dragon, right? You slay the dragon, right? What does the other archetype in culture do with the dragon? The beauty and the beast, right? The princess who kisses the frog and turns the frog into the prince. You see that other cultural archetype? And there's a whole other image. On one hand, we slay the dragon. On the other hand, right, we engage the dragon, right? The beauty and the beast, right? The spell is broken when the beauty remains and engages the beast and transforms the beast into the prince. So we've got these two powerful, powerful, deep undercurrent archetypes in culture that exist in every spirit system. There's the male masculine who wields his sword, and with his sword, right, his phallic sword or his aggressive sword or his economic sword or his military sword slays the dragon. And we have in contradistinction the beauty and the beast, right? The frog and the princess, right? These two images, okay? Who is the dragon in biblical thought? Who's the dragon? The dragon in biblical thought is who? Who's the image of the dragon in biblical thought? Anyone? The snake. It's the snake in the Garden of Eden. The snake in the Garden of Eden has two relationships, right? The first view of the snake in the great Garden of Eden story is that the snake is evil. The snake is the cause of the fall. The snake is the cause of all the problems. The snake is the cause of discord. The snake needs to be punished, legs cut off, right? Destroyed. That's the snake. Right? Who's the only person in the biblical story who talks to the snake? The woman. The feminine archetype talks to the snake, engages the snake in conversation. It's a whole different archetype, and indeed, in Kabbalistic literature, there is an old numerical play that dates to the 13th century, written in the writings of the Kabbalist Isaac the Blind, who says, I'll say it in Hebrew, I'll translate it, it's gorgeous. He says, Nachash gematria Mashiach. Nachash, snake, in numerical valuation of Hebrew letters, which is an essential Kabbalistic tool dating back 1,000 years. Every Hebrew letter, Aleph is 1, Beit is 2, Gimel is 3. Every Hebrew letter has a numerical valuation. So one of the ways the Kabbalists decode, right, philosophical ideas in Hebrew as they look for numerical equivalence between disparate words. So snake has the same numerical equivalency as Messiah. And explain the Kabbalists, right, the feminine archetype who speaks to the snake, who engages the darkness, transforms the snake into Messiah. Okay? Star Wars. Okay? We talked about Star Wars. Star Wars. What's the image? What's the image in Star Wars? Core image, core cultural image. George Lucas. Right? Star Wars 9 is coming out next year. Okay? What's the image? Right? There's a sword. Right? Sword is classically, right? The sword slays the dragon. Right? The sword is the masculine archetype, slays the dragon. Right? The man wields the sword, right, and deals with and destroys and excises evil. Right? Decisions. Right? The English word decision is a sword word. It's to decide, right? It's to excise. It's to sharply distinguish between, right, this binary world of good and evil. Right? Excision, decision is a binary word. There's two sides, the left side and the right side. Never the twain shall meet. Good and evil, up and down. Right? That's why men make decisions. Right? Right? The masculine archetype, or the masculine archetype in woman. Because, of course, we're not talking about men and women. We're talking about masculine, feminine archetypes that exist deeply in each one of us. So the sword, the cherev, the sword, right, in our classical world is a masculine archetype, and it thrusts forward, and it destroys, and it distinguishes sharply between different arenas. What does the sword do in this contemporary cultural image of Star Wars, influenced as it was by goddess theories, which Joseph Campbell brought to George Lucas when Star Wars was made? And you don't need to know it right, historically, happens to be true, but you just have to see the movie, and it's kind of eminently clear. What's the sword in Star Wars? Remember? A lightsaber. How does a lightsaber work? Anyone ever used one? Right, how does a lightsaber work? How does it work? If you're connected to the force, right, a marketing word for the divine flow of life in the universe, right, God as it were, right, the God you don't believe in doesn't exist, right, the force is easier to deal with. Okay, so if you're connected to the force, then your lightsaber rises, right, a symbol of potency, right, a symbol of competence, right, and if you lose your connection to the force, then your lightsaber wilts, right, a symbol of impotence, of loss of strength. So the sword symbol has now been transformed from a classical masculine symbol, right, which is one of thrusting forward, to a Kabbalistic, what does the word Kabbalah mean again? Means to receive. Kabbalah means to what? To receive. To receive what? Right? To receive, the Kabbalah talks about nukva, right? The feminine archetype which is able to receive the flow of the universe and let the flow course through the one in order for that flow to emerge as great power. Let's look at society for a second, okay? In society today, society is set up today. Who are the feminine archetypes? Who are the masculine archetypes? So the masculine archetypes are economic, right, corporate, right, political, for sure military. Okay, what's the feminine archetype in culture? Writers, artists, sports figures, singers, right? In other words, there's two movements in culture, right? And we pay people a lot of money to symbolize the feminine archetype, but we don't want the feminine archetype to get too close, right, to actually the essential power throb of culture. What Star Wars suggests as a very subtle image, and the reason when a movie kind of goes blockbuster, it's not just because it had a good marketing machine, it's because it subtly touches an idea. No one quite gets it when they see it, but they realize they're seeing something. They're seeing something, some image, some movement, some future vision, right? What it bespeaks or invites us to is an image in which the sword, right, is the sword of receiving. It's receiving the flow of energy and being able with it, to transform the darkness. So now, let's go the next step together.